Yo, what is up? Howie Spangler here. This is Tales from the Green Room, guys. Episode number 148. How are you today? How's everybody's week going? I'm having a good one. I'm having a good week so far. I've just been I had my COVID booster last week, and I kind of felt a little shitty over the weekend. Nothing too crazy, like nothing like I did when I got the actual vaccine or when I actually got COVID. Those are the worst. But it was that one shot of Moderna, and arm was sore for a few days. But then I had it done last Thursday, and then Friday, felt fine. Went out for a friend's birthday party thing, and, had a few beers, and yeah, I was fine. And then Saturday, Sunday, and a little bit of Monday, was feeling a little strange, but like, it was only like head cold type of feeling, and I was kind of nasal. I'm still a little bit nasal, but I think like by Monday, Tuesday, I was feeling like fine, you know, just a little, you know, nasally or whatever. But anyway, so yeah, I'm glad that's over. I'm boosted. I'm good to go. Hope for this tour. Hopefully, I don't want to cancel any fucking shows. we've had enough of that. So I just saw Bumpin' Uglies had to cancel this week's shows. Somebody got COVID in their camp, and it's a bummer. But man, trying to avoid that shit. Anyway, before we get into it, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're on YouTube right now, hit the subscribe button, smash the like button, and ring the bell so you know when I go live, upload. Anything like that. Let's see. What you're listening to right now, DMCA Free Music. It's an album that I created. Actually, it's an instrumental album called Aberrations. And it's everywhere, Apple, Spotify, wherever. If you're a creator and you need some music for your videos, podcasts, live streams, you can use this music. Without getting any claims, don't even worry about it. You don't have to credit me or anything. Just throw them in the back if you want. I just thought that'd be kind of cool to do that. Anyway, don't forget also to join the Pineapple Crew on our Discord community, and the link is in the description. We're just on there chatting and goofing off, stuff like that. Anyway. Catch me this weekend with Meager Kings. Those guys, we're going to go do a few shows, just acoustic. Going to be in Ohio. So tomorrow, not tomorrow, I'm recording this on Wednesday. So I'm already going to be doing the run. So hopefully you caught us in Newark, Ohio at the Dank House. And then Friday, we're going to be in Pittsburgh at Fan Club Sports Bar for our guy, the God Mod, Tom Leach. We're doing a benefit show for his family on this Friday in Pittsburgh. And then Saturday, I'm going to be at Mercury Music Lounge in Lakewood, Ohio. I think Thursday and Saturday are free shows, and then Friday is a benefit show, so obviously, you know, pay to get. I think it's like $20, but it's for a good cause. Yeah, looking forward to playing some shows and get, you know, doing some driving. Should be good. What else is happening? Ballyhoo's got some shows next weekend. We're going to be in we've got one show next weekend. We're going to be at Zen West in Baltimore on the 22nd on Saturday. So can't wait to rock out with the band again. We haven't played since I guess since Halloween. Is that right? I don't remember anymore. But yeah, looking forward to getting my rock on. Getting my rock on, man. Once again, if you're watching on YouTube, I have changed my I've changed the look of the pod. I can't stick with anything. I still love the neon shit. I love all that. Got the pineapple there in the corner, but like, yeah, I don't know. I'm always trying different things. I like to change it up. I can't stick with it. My mom had this thing about, like, she changed the living room around probably every 3 months. We'd have a new layout. She'd move the couch, move the TV. Like, the whole room would be different when I come home from school. It's super weird. But, you know, she liked to change it up. That's fine. That's fine. So I'm sitting here with my cup of coffee. I was looking through Facebook. Coffee. Looking through Facebook and on the Bally Hooligans fan group. And someone had posted that they would love to see or love to hear a podcast about my favorite or most memorable shows, venues, you know, when you booked a show, what was the show that you booked that was like, felt like an accomplishment, like an achievement, an unlock to the next level, you know? So I thought that would be a good premise, because I don't know what to talk about anymore on this show. I've covered a lot of things, and when I don't have a guest, I'm just talking to myself, basically, and I just don't know what to talk about anymore. So please let me know in the comments, or send me a DM, or jump on the Discord, and let me know what I should be talking about on this podcast. Approaching 150 episodes here. What else can I talk about? So anyway, I thought this was a great premise, and I guess we'll go into it right now. I guess the first like big memorable show or experience that, you know, for Ballyhoo was probably, I mean, our first show, obviously, March 1st, 1996. That was a crazy, and I've talked about this before on the pod, but we practiced for like 8 months leading up to that. It was our first show ever. We started the band in the summer of 95, and I think in the beginning of the school year, so that fall, there was talk of doing like a show, and it had to be a benefit show. If it was going to be at the school, it had to be a benefit show for something, some sort of organization at the school. So we did a benefit show for the German club, I believe. And it was $2 to get in. It was it was $2 advance, $2.50 at the door. And that was my thinking. I was like, Yeah, we'll make it like 50 cents more. So we'll make people need to get tickets right now. Not $3, not $5. $2.50. I don't know if that affected ticket sales or not. I guess we'll never know. You know, I was a kid, so. Yeah, so, you know, we booked that show and we just practiced. Man, we played every day after school, and it was, you know, we were so pumped. We were like, we got to be the best. We got to be the best band at this thing. And we killed it. We had a great time. The show went off. I was so nervous. We played probably like 10 Green Day songs and a few other covers, and then like a handful of songs that we had written. And I mean, it was just a great night. I think we played for like an hour and a half that night, or like an hour 40 or something. I came out there trying to be Billy Joe Armstrong. I had stickers on my guitar. I had the button down tee or the button down shirt with the wearing some goofy tie and my khaki JNCOs. And yeah, man, it was the start of something wonderful. And I felt like I wanted to do that for the rest of my life. That's I'd say that's probably the most memorable show out of all of them. And we played easily, you know, 2,000 shows, I'd say. 2,000 plus. you know, we were, once we started touring, we were in 2006, we were doing, you know, 200 plus shows a year. You know, and that was 15 years ago. So I don't know if anybody knows, math, please do that math and get back to me. Let me know in the Discord or something. So yeah, that was a super memorable experience. that was 96. So 2001 was probably the next big show for us. You know, we'd played shows, we played house parties, and we worked our way into the Baltimore club scene. Which, you know, those are all memorable in their own right. But what really stands out to me, 2001, there was a station here, an alternative station called HFS, here, and they became pretty big in the, you know, the Mid-Atlantic, the Delmarva area. And it was like the competition to 98 Rock, which plays, you know, a lot of butt rock and AC/DC and I think they call it active rock. And HFS was playing alternative rock. So Stone Temple Pilots, I mean, back then, you know, in the 90s, I think I got turned on the HFS in 93, 94. So yeah, it was like Pearl Jam, the Meat Puppets, you know, stuff like that. 311. And then, yeah, so 2000, by 2001, they built up this festival they did every year. And it had built up so big, they ended up doing 2 days that year. It was HF Festival 2001, and it was 2 days over Memorial Day weekend. And I believe it was Sunday, Monday. And it was at RFK Stadium in D.C. And what they would do every year, they would have a competition, a battle of the bands. And I remember like every year submitting for this thing and trying to get the band in there. And we didn't have like, we only had our first album. And I guess at the time, I mean, it sounded pretty good. It still sounds pretty good to this day, you know. Not the, you know, the performances weren't the best on that record, but pretty damn good for what it was, our first album. And we would use that, you know, to push the band. I'd pick the best three songs or something and submit them to radio stations. And we were trying to get radio play and all that stuff. It was a wild time back then. And so finally got, I guess I'd gotten to be friends with one of the promo guys there. Shout out to Mike Hefe. And I was sort of getting the inside scoop, and I don't believe I was getting any special treatment or anything like that. I was just kind of getting like, I would call him like every day, like, bro, well, okay, so what's happened? Have they made a decision? Like, what's going on? He would just let me know, like, yeah, they're moving it into, you know, they're having a, everybody's listening, and it was like the program director, everybody's in these meetings, trying to find, I think it was like three shows. It was two or three shows, of like, they do like a demo contest, and then they get like a certain amount of bands in to do like the battle of the bands, and then they have the finals. And he would let me know along the way, like where they were at, like what stage they were at. And so I mean, one day, and he kind of hinted to me, and I remember being at work. I was working at Saks Fifth Avenue in Aberdeen, just the warehouse. And I would call him on lunch break. I would sneak away on, you know, during my other breaks, you know, that I wasn't supposed to be taking. And I would call and be like, bro, like, what's up? Where are we at? And he kind of hinted, he said, yeah, they're going to be, I think, announcing at the end of the week. and you know, just hang in there. And like, I don't know, I kind of got this idea like, oh man, maybe we got in this time. That would be awesome. And yeah, that we got an email or something or a call. I don't remember. And they told us we were in. We made it into the competition. The HF Festival Big Break is what it was. And I was fucking blown away. I couldn't believe it. I was like, finally, we got some kind of a break here. And so we played the show, and it was us and a band called Cactus Patch at the time. They're called Army of Me now. Great band. And another band called 360 Loose. And we played, I believe it was on Kent Island in Maryland, on the Eastern Shore, at some venue. And did the thing. Even like Benji from Good Charlotte was there hanging out. I got to say hi to him for a second. And like, we did the thing and we rocked it. We killed it, man. Like, I remember we just played so well, and just the live show was just like really epic. It was big. We were going for it. I mean, we played like our life depended on it, you know? And so, and then Cactus Patch, they played and they were great. But they brought like a school bus of like 50 people. We didn't think to do that. We had like, I don't know, like 20 friends there, 15, 20 friends. And plus the crowd that was there was into it. But they had a bigger presence, you know? And I'd never heard of them, but they did it right, you know? And that certainly played into, you know, the decision, I imagine. Because they judge on like originality and crowd participation and things like that. And they really had the crowd locked because they brought like 50 of their friends on a school bus. And that was the way to do it. So when, at the end of the night, I remember, oh man, I remember Bob Wah, he had the results, and he was like, okay, I just want you guys to know before we announce this, that this was very close. And I knew that it was going to be us or Cactus Patch, because the other band, like, they're all right, but like I just knew we crushed them. Like the live show, I knew we killed it. You know, I knew, but we were going to have a problem with Cactus Patch. So I knew it was between the two. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, it like confirmed it. And he's like, it was very close. It was incredibly close. I was like, fuck, dude. This is like, you know, what's going to happen here? And the winner is Cactus Patch. We're like, fuck. So we were bummed out. I was bummed out, you know. Dude, it is what it is, you know. So we didn't make it to the finals, but we crushed at the, what do they call those? The preliminaries, I guess. And for me, we lost, but it was still an achievement. It was like, man, we did this though. Like we got here. We got their attention now, you know. That's what's something we've been looking for years. And I mean, at this point, we were a band for 6 years. It had taken a long time, you know. And I believe that same year is when we got, or maybe it was the year before 2000, we started getting airplay on the local shows. So like, HFS would play us on their local Sunday night show. And then Matt Davis at 98 Rock, Noise in the Basement, every Sunday night, he started playing us as well. And that dude's been a huge supporter of our band for years. He would later come to, you know, our second album record release party, and he hosted it for us and shouted out. It was awesome. It was great. anyway, I digress. So we did that show, we lost. And then I think I caught the finals. And it was like Fidel and Cactus Patch and another band. And Fidel was another band that I loved from the area. My buddy Dave Hill. He had a band called Coloring Lesson in the 90s, a reggae band. They were so sick. Anyway, Fidel was like his new kind of like rock band. And they were great. The Cactus Patch won the whole thing. And they ended up, whoever wins gets to, I guess, headline the main, no, not headline, open the main stage. I think that's what it was. You get to open the main stage. So that was, there was a lot at stake, you know? So, so that night I went to Record Theater where they had the finals and hung out. And this is, you know, I'll just jump in, teachable moment here. Get into your community. If you're trying to, if you're really trying to like do something, like make something, you know, get your name out there. It's not just playing shows. It's mixing it up with the community. So get out in your scene and hang out with other bands, meet all the fans, meet the people that go to the clubs. We used to go to Baltimore all the time. I would go to Baltimore every week, a few times a week, to Fletcher's and all these other spots, and just hang out with other artists and the regulars. And that's how you sort of, you know, build your rapport and get people to come to the shows, and then get on other shows and swap gigs with other bands. So that's what I was doing there. I wanted to be there to see everything going down. I want to be in the middle of it. I loved being in the thick of it back then. And so at the end of the night, I think I was talking to Dave or something from Fidel after the show, and Bob was there. He was the music director for HFS at the time. And he's the one that had announced, like, oh, this was so close. This was so close. I was like, hey, man, I just want to say thank you very much for having us. We really, really appreciate it. You know, anything you need or whatever, please, you know, we would love to. We'll take any show. We'll take anything, you know. Just pouring my heart out to this guy. And he goes, hey, man, you guys did great. He was holding my hand, just shaking my hand. He's like, you guys did great. It was great to have you the other night. And man, yeah, it was very close, man. It was crazy. And he said, so we'll see you Memorial Day weekend, right? On the local stage. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, man, we'll see you there. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, it took me like a minute to get what he was saying. He was basically inviting us to play the local stage anyway. Like, we got to play HF Festival. So like, I just stopped, my jaw dropped, and I just hugged him like a big weirdo. And and he like patted my back, and he's like, yeah, okay, man. Yep. I was fucking pumped, man. I couldn't believe it. We were going to play HF Festival. What a huge, I don't know. It was fucking huge, man. So, fast forward. I want to say it was May 27th, 2001. Yeah. We had to get there super early. And back then I was 20 years old. We didn't wake up before noon, you know? So like having to wake up at like 6 a.m. to meet up with everybody and then get down there. And I'm sure we showed up in like separate cars, you know, the drum kits, and, you know, it's just crazy. I think Donald had a backline kit that day. But yeah, got there early, got our credentials. We had two fucking DJs. So like I invited Scott to come play. He wasn't like in the band yet, but he played a little bit on the record. And his buddy, Paul, who was also a DJ, had played on the record 365. And so I invited both of them to come out and play on their particular songs, you know. And I remember Chris Keith, he's a good dude. I was like, hey, can I get one more pass for my second DJ? He goes you have two fucking DJs. That's so stupid. And so like, yeah, I got two DJs. So he was super cool. Gave me the passes. Man, we played at 10:20 that morning, and I have the pictures from this, so I have to throw up somewhere. We played at 10:20 in the morning, opened the local stage. Huge. It was out in the parking lot. There were people everywhere because it was the parking lot. They were just getting there. The gates were at noon for the main show. And we were outside of RFK Stadium playing like it was our last fucking show ever. I mean, it was so much fun. And it was one of those moments where I just felt like we're a fucking band now. Like, this is legit. Like, we're fucking pros. I mean, we didn't get paid, you know, we didn't need to get paid. You know, it was like, this felt right. This was enough. You know, played the show. I mean, all day walking around after that, just getting props from, you know, we'd see the radio station people, you know, here and there in the crowd, the promo people and things like that. You know, just getting props all day from people that saw the show earlier, new fans, whatever, friends from home, because a lot of, you know, everybody went. So all our friends from school were there. And it was just, it was one of those moments, man, where we just felt like, fuck, we arrived, you know? So, big, 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 big thank you to everybody at HFS for having us out for that back in 2001, goddamn, 21 years ago. Holy shit. Yeah, man, what a huge thing. So HFS, what, like, on top of that, you know, who played that year? Green Day, Linkin Park, Incubus, Weezer, Stained when they were cool. I mean, it was a huge, I mean, Newfound Glory, everybody was there, dude. It was such a wonderful show. So yeah, HF Festival 2001, one of my most memorable shows for sure. going forward, probably I'd say our first show with 311 in 2008. And I'll throw Slightly Stupid in there too, because it was the same weekend. And I remember, like, at the time when I got the offer to do the 311 show, I got the offer to do the Slightly Stupid shows that weekend as well. It was the same weekend. And I remember, like, I remember having to turn down one of the Stupid shows because we were already doing these two shows with 311. And saying that to their management, you know, over email. Oh, dude, I would love to do both. We got these two shows with 311, but we can do this one. It was a wild weekend, you know, to be able to do those shows. And those were the shows that, like, we were trying to break into, you know, because the genre that we're in, the American reggae scene, back then it was called the reggae rock scene, or the white boy reggae scene. I don't like that term anymore, white boy reggae. It kind of, like, demeans it. And I remember back in the day, this is a little side note, back in the day, like, I put it on all the flyers, and I even put it on the t-shirts, like, Ballyhoo, white boy reggae, like, because I thought that was, like, the easiest way to sell it, where you would understand what it was. So it wasn't like your, you know, it wasn't like your standard, like, vintage reggae. It was just, like, three or four white dudes, you know, trying to play reggae music. I don't know. It's, to me, it was, like, funny, but then later I was like, ah, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of weird. So yeah, I guess now it's called the American reggae scene. And even now, like, I think reggae fusion for us is probably even, like, a better way to say it. Cause, like, we're fusing reggae and punk and, you know, rock and all this stuff. So, okay, back to the story. So yeah, we got to do, it was March 15th and 16th of 2008. And our album Cheers was about to come out, and it was going to be out that next weekend. And I feel like the connection came from working with Scotch Ralston the summer before in 2007. Scotch Ralston is 311 Soundman, and he produced and engineered a few of their early albums and some of their later albums as well. And we got to be good friends with him doing the Cheers record. And I think maybe he put in a word for us or something. Anyway, yeah, we did these two shows and they were slamming. Like, I remember being like super nervous. We were in Rolla, Missouri on the first one. This was March 15th, 2008. And it was like a college town, and it was around St. Pat's weekend. So like, apparently this town like goes apeshit for St. Patrick's Day. So they've been drinking all day. And by the time the show happened, everybody's like passed out. Everybody's like, and it was a dry show. They couldn't keep drinking. So it was a dry show. So everybody's like passed out from being out all day long drinking and then coming to the show and not being able to drink. And everybody knows that when you're a day drinker and you stop, I mean, you want to go to bed at like 7 p.m. So it was us, Story of the Year, and 311. And the show ran behind, like the production part of it. So like sound checks, and we didn't get a sound check at all. We were the bottom of the barrel here. Like, you know, nobody gives a fuck about you when you're the opener on these big shows. Like, it's all about the headliner and then like the support act. If you're first to three, like, or first to four, sometimes you're going to get screwed because they get to take as much time as they need and you're left with whatever they give you. And so like when we headline shows, we try to give bands, we try to take 2 hours tops, you know, like just getting set up, do a few songs just to get, you know, knock the rust off, run through a couple things, whatever, and then get off. We don't like to take, you know, a bunch of time and, you know, leave bands with like no time. That's happened to us a few times and it's super annoying. So we try to like let bands like have the time. And so we didn't get a sound check. We didn't even get a line check. The line check was essentially just us going out and playing our first song, and they're adjusting while we're going. And it was like the worst mix ever. I'm sure it sounded terrible out front. But I remember being so nervous for the show, thinking like, oh my God, you know, because you wanted this the whole forever, you know, and like 311's one of our favorite bands, and like all you wanted is for this show to go off and just be a great experience and have their fans accept us and like what we're doing. So that night was super strange because of the sound issues and everybody being, you know, tired and drunk. I think even 311 thought it was a weird show for that reason. But that night, we got to hang out with the guys. I got a text from Chad. That's another part of it. We had worked with Chad Sexton before. He mixed our song, The Friend Zone, on Cheers, that Scotch worked on, that record. So there's that as well. But he texted me. He's like, hey, man, come on the bus. And it was, so we got to go on the bus for 2 hours and hang out with Nick, Tim, and Chad. And it was like the coolest thing, man. They were just hanging out. Like, Tim's like, here, drink all the beer and like, you know, smoke this weed. And like, I don't know, it was nice to just be on this tour bus with this band that we loved and admired, trying not to be the biggest fangirls ever. You know, I think we played it cool that night. But yeah, so that was a great night. It was the next night that really like pulled it for us. Like, it really, you know, proved like, okay, now I think we're in with this 311 community. So we played in Columbus, Ohio at Lifestyles, and it was, I think it was just us and them. Yeah, it was just us and them that night. And we played inside and it was nuts. I mean, there was probably like 3,000 people. Whatever it was, I think it was sold out, whatever the cap is there. And man, we came out, we did our thing. It was much better experience because we had a sound check. You know, we did all the things, came out and just destroyed. And from that point on in the Columbus area, I mean, we were just like, you know, and we'd built it up because we'd been playing house parties and stuff. We started at house parties in like 06, and then we upgraded, moved up to like venues in the area in like 07. And then 08, we're playing with 311 Lifestyles. And that was a very natural progression. That's how it should have happened, you know? So that all just felt really good. The show was great. And then from then on, we were just like, you know, we'd play in like Findlay, Ohio. That was like another one. We got invited to play this bar. They were all 311 fans who saw us at the show. They brought us to play their bar. We just kept going back every couple months and we would just crush it. So that, like I said, it was a natural thing, natural progression. It felt right. So I'd say those shows that weekend with 311 was great. And then we played that Monday with Slightly Stupid. That was a memorable show for a different reason. I learned that just because we were in the genre, along with Stupid and the other bands, didn't mean that all the fans were going to love what we were doing. This is strange. This was a strange evening. A few things happened that night. And I remember like the Stupid guys were being cool. Some of my guys went on their bus and smoked out with them a little bit. So that was really nice of them. Obviously we thank them for having us on the show, but I had an incident that happened later with a bouncer. I'll explain in a second. But no, we're doing the show and I think the place is sold out. It was nuts. In Allentown, PA. Crocodile Rock is the name of this venue. And the crowds were, the fans were nuts, right? They were like rabid. And they wanted Stupid to come out. You know, we had an hour set and I thought it was too long going into it, but we were like, fuck it, let's go. And sure enough, like 40 minutes in, their crowd starts chanting, Slightly Stupid. It's like basically get the fuck off stage, you know? And I think back then we were too rock for this. They wanted to hear like chill, like, you know, they wanted to hear the kind of stuff that Stupid was doing. And we didn't really do that. And we came out swinging, playing really heavy. And it just made it weird, I guess. Looking back, I can feel it. I'm like cringing thinking about it now, the set list we played. But, so I learned a lesson there to kind of like tailor your show to whatever it is. If you're opening for somebody, kind of tailor the show to sort of fit in a little better. Do what you do, but do like the stuff that's more, do the stuff that's going to help further the career and not like shoot yourself in the foot, which we've done so many times. I said this to my manager yesterday, actually. I've always been my greatest adversary, you know, my worst enemy. And probably shot myself in the foot so many times, as a matter of principle. And sometimes it's not worth it. And sometimes, you know, it's, you got to think about the greater good. So that's a whole other podcast episode. So we did the thing. We got done, you know, we got a lot of like, yeah, cool, cool. But like, there was definitely that core group in the middle that was like flipping us off and like, get the fuck off stage. Like, you know, so later that night or after the set, the crew at this venue, fucking terrible people, throwing the gear around, ripping the stuff out of the walls, like wanting to carry things. Like I was trying to put my head away, my guitar head away, just to kind of like put it in its case, just to get it out of the way. they're just, oh man, they're just rushing. And so I have to make my way through the crowd. I'm on the other side, and they're separated. They have that you guys have seen this before at shows, where they have the gate like running up the middle or off to the side, where it's like under 21 and then 21 and over, basically keeping the kids away from the bar. And I made my way through the 21 and up section near the around the bar, get to the front where the stage is, and I go to hop over the guardrail to get to our merch table. And as soon as I plant my feet down, I feel this tug on the back of my shirt, and you know, 2 seconds later, I'm on the floor. I get slammed down to the floor. My shirt's ripped off my body. I look up, and this fucking bouncer is holding my ripped shirt in his hand, and he's saying, "You don't fucking cross the shit. You don't fucking blah 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 blah." I stood up, you know, with no shirt on. I'm like looking at him, like, "Dude, what is your problem? Like, you didn't just see me on stage for an hour. I was up there for an hour playing. I'm in the band. I'm just trying to get to our merch table. And I just asked these nice people if I could, you know, get over the fence." And they were like, "Yeah, cool. What's the deal?" And you know, I don't know if he thought I was 21 or under 21 or what. And he's like, "Oh, you Mr. Big Rockstar. Oh, you're so fucking cool. You can just do whatever you want." I'm like, "Dude, oh my God." The super aggressive and fuck that place. Anyway, so that was a weird memorable night.
"My apologies. I couldn't hear what you said. Sorry. Could you say that again?"
That's weird. Okay. My watch just started talking to me. Okay, I got like at least two more here that are like memorable shows. Janice Live in St. Pete, Florida. It's like still our favorite venue to play. It has been for a decade. It's just that place. It's got that vibe. It's outside. It's in a courtyard. It's downtown. There's this big tree that runs up the middle with LEDs on it. And the stage, the light show, everything about it is just great. The green room, just a wonderful place to play. The shows go off. Like, we have some of the biggest crowds ever at Janice Live. And I'll take you back. Like, I wanted to play this venue so bad because my favorite band of all time, as you guys know, Green Day, I'd bought the single for Longview. Back in the day, kids, you could go to the record store. Okay, you go to the record store and you could buy an import CD of, or a single CD, and it came in a little slim case, of whatever, you know, whatever band, and it would have like bonus tracks on it, songs that didn't make the record, or live tracks. And in this case, the Longview single had like two or three live tracks on it, and they were recorded at a place called Janice Landing in St. Petersburg, Florida. And it sounded awesome. It was it was Green Day in 1994. It was explosive, you know. The songs, obviously, I love the songs that were on the, you know, on this CD single. And it just made it, I don't know, it just made it like one of those holy grail venues. And I was like, one day we're going to play at Janice, just like Green Day. And I think it was, I don't exactly remember the exact date, which is weird for me because I remember a lot of weird dates with the band. but we've been playing St. Pete in like, from like 06 to 08. Leading up to all this, we'd play in at like the State Theater in town there. And then I think maybe it was like a show with Badfish or something. I don't exactly remember, but I remember like feeling like, holy shit, we made it. We played Janice Live. The name used to be Janice Landing. It's called Janice Live now. And I just remember thinking like, holy shit, we're here. We did it. We played the same spot that one of my favorite bands, that my absolute favorite band of all time, played at years ago. And I just felt awesome, you know? We have played Janis live many times since then. Every time it is a smash. Crowd's great. You know, everything. It's just a wonderful place to play. So yeah, that place is near and dear to my heart for sure. You know, you gotta really go for the aim for the stars, guys. Like, you know, set yourself on a course and work, reverse engineer it, figure out what moves you need to make to get to that point. And it's going to be a lot of little moves. There's going to be some big moves here, some big jumps, but a lot of little tiny steps to get there. And we try to do it in as least steps possible, right? But it's got to make sense. It has to be a natural, organic build. And I think it was Yassad from Pepper. I was reading an article years ago, and he said something. I'm sure it's a misquote, but something about the longer it takes to build the castle, the longer it takes to fall down. Something like that. But basically, like, spend time building your community, building your crowd, building your presence online for sure. Keep releasing music, keep playing shows, and it'll happen. For us, it's taken a very long time. We're in, you know, this is like 26 years of being a band, 27 years of being a band. Oh my God. Oh, I keep forgetting it's 2022. This summer will be 27 years. Oh my God. Anyway, so I got one more show for you that is, memorable. I'll say it was 2008. It was like November or December 2008, something like that. And it was us and Dirty Heads. And this was before they got big, before Lay Me Down. This is like a year and a half before Lay Me Down got on the radio. And we did like 3 weeks together at the end of 2008. And we're just going around playing shows, and it was awesome. We started in California. We met them in San Diego, I think, and then we made our way back east at Prophet Bar in Dallas, Texas, in particular. And now Prophet Bar is this little spot in Dallas, and it's got the green room. If I'm remembering correctly, the green room here at Prophet Bar was pretty magnificent. Okay, one of the things when you go to green rooms, any green room where you're allowed to draw on the wall or put stickers on it, there's going to be a dick, right? Almost always. Yeah, there's a 99.9% chance there's going to be a dick on the wall in Sharpie. Well, at Prophet Bar, it's covered in dicks. Covered. There are drawings of penises all over the wall, the ceiling. And I believe the old light fixtures, the long tube lights, fluorescent, whatever they are. Someone had turned that into a giant penis. They just put a put the head on one end and the balls on the other. Brilliant. There was, I believe, on the wall, there was a giant helicopter. Beautiful. Beautiful dicks all over the wall. So that was one. You know, that sort of describes what the, you know, what the venue and what the show is like that night. So Ballyhoo and Dirty Heads played to 8 people at Profit Bar in Dallas, Texas in 2008. But we played the show like there were 800 there. And I remember us laughing and just being happy to be there, you know? Oh shit, we're in Texas. We're playing a show. We're, you know, 2,000 miles from home. And it was a fun night. We sat there at the bar. There was Jared showed me Cha-Cha. Does anybody remember Cha-Cha? You could call this number and ask, or no, it was a, would you call them or you text them? I don't remember. You text or call Cha-Cha and they would call you back or text you back or something with like an answer. You basically ask it a question and then they would send you an answer and you could get as weird as you wanted and they would answer the question. And I don't know, I'm assuming this was like a person on the other end and probably being like, holy shit. And like hitting Google, looking up the meaning and posting it back, like incredible. We used to get super weird and ask it the dumbest, weirdest questions. But yeah, I mean, so I kind of went through big show memories for different reasons. And I think I threw in those weird shows because it's dynamic, you know, because when there's something really great happening, there's something really weird happening, you know, in parallel. And it can't always be HF Festival 2001, local stage, packed parking lot, biggest show ever. It's, you're going to have your riddled with dicks, green room, little, you know, bar with 8 people. And it's just part of growing, you know? And this was, I mean, that show was like 2 years after we started touring, you know, and there's certain spots where we could bring, you know, 100 people, but we couldn't put 10 people in this venue at the time, you know, even with the Dirty Heads, you know, it's wild. One other show, Charm City Festival in 2012. It was right after Warped Tour, and Warped Tour is obviously a memorable thing too. I couldn't believe we got on those shows. But we came home from Warped Tour and this was like September, 2012, and we played in Baltimore. There were probably 7,000 people out there. There's a picture on my Instagram of this, but like, and this was before Instagram had you could post like a wide shot. It was just the square. So it didn't even show I tried to get as much of the crowd as I could into the shot. Like what you see is only a third. Like there's still two sides that you're not seeing. It was incredible. And that was like, we headlined the second stage. Weezer played that night on the main stage, but dude, I couldn't believe how many people, because, you know, like you at a festival, you don't know what you're going to get. It's like you could have people watching or you could people just going to the bathroom, hanging out by the beer tent. All these people came to the show. And it was like, wow, it was people singing. It's on YouTube somewhere. Ballyhoo Charm City Music Festival in Baltimore. man, crazy day. Yeah, I'm very lucky to have the life that I've built with music And, you know, I'm thankful to everybody out there that's coming to the shows still, and all the new fans that we're picking up, and, you know, hearing the band for the first time, coming to see a show. Anybody that's ever bought merch, you know, this is a grind. It takes a very long time to build something. You know, some people can do it faster, you know, and that's fine. And there's often times where I wish this had gone a lot faster, you know. There were some dark times along the way, but I'm so grateful for the people that listen now and give us the love. So, you know, thank you guys for sure. Well, I think that's going to do it, man, for episode number 148, Tales from the Green Room podcast. Please please subscribe, you know, smash the like button, all that fun stuff. Yeah, that's it. Join the Pineapple Crew on the Discord, man. Come hang out with us and chat. Look out for my live streams every Wednesday night on YouTube. Send in some requests. And y'all have a wonderful day, man. Take it easy. Peace.